Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In Cairo today, opponents of ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi occupy certain corners of the city. Morsi's supporters occupy others. No one is seeing eye to eye, and the country feels as fractured, if not more, than it was during its historic 2011 uprising. The BBC's Lise Doucette spoke with Morsi supporters in Nasser City in eastern Cairo.
But the army has said you should evacuate the square because it could be destabilizing.
They are, not for me, they are Muslim Brotherhood Party and all supporters of Morsi are ready to die here for Islam, for Morsi, for everything.
But Egypt's military leaders also took a step forward after Monday's killing of more than 50 Islamist protesters. The country's interim government announced a six-month timetable for a return to civilian democracy and appointed a temporary prime minister, Hazem al-Biblawi, a prominent Egyptian liberal economist.
We also note that Ramadan begins today. For Muslim Egyptians, the month-long ritual of fasting and purity may be one of the few sources of solidarity remaining as the country struggles with crisis in this latest wave of the Egyptian revolution. 2 years ago, at the height of the first Egyptian uprising, we spoke with a group of young Egyptians who were living in Massachusetts when former President Hosni Mubarak was thrown out of power. Then they felt a surging sense of joy, possibility, hope, and a little trepidation. Today, we've invited them back to reflect on what's happening in Egypt now. And joining us in the studio is Hisham Hamouda. He's an attending psychiatrist at Children's Hospital and an instructor in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He has family in Alexandria, Egypt. Hisham, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Also with us is Ina El-Hadidi. She's an English and biology major at UMass Boston. She's in Chicago for the summer and joins us on the line. Ina, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
And with us as well is Habib El-Maghrisi. He's a junior international business major at Northeastern University. His family is Coptic Christian, and today he's joining us from Cairo, Egypt. Habib, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
So, Habib, let me start with you. You've been in Cairo for some time now. You were in the streets on June 30th. During that mass demonstration that led to the ousting of Mohamed Morsi, what is Cairo like today? What's been happening to you today?
Yeah, that's right. I actually arrived in Cairo from the United States just a couple of days before those plans, so I sort of knew what I was getting into. But on that day, June 30th, the thing that struck everyone, me, was just the sheer amount of people that went down in the streets. It was known that these protests were planned for a long time, but I think it surprised many people just how many different Egyptians went down from all walks of life and protested against the regime of Mohamed Morsi. And in the end, it was a very successful movement because just two or three days later, the army stepped in and Mohamed Morsi is not president of Egypt. So once that period passed, there was lots of celebration. But now Cairo is more split. Because we're now, like, once again, in just over a year into our second period of post-presidential transition. Kind of a confusing period politically and also on the streets, with lots of people expressing their views.
Well, Habib and Ina and Hisham, I want to play a little tape that from your first visit to us back in February 2011. And Habib, let's start with you because, again, we spoke with you first on February 2nd, 2011, just days after the historic January 25th uprising in the first wave of the Egyptian revolution. And Habib, here's what you said.
The thing about the Egyptian people is at this stage, they know what they don't want, and that's Mubarak. But they don't know what they do want. And when it's reached that stage where people don't know what they want, but they know what they don't want, you know it's time for change.
So, Habib, you're in Cairo today. It sounds like not much has actually changed since you told us that 2 years ago. I mean, it sounds like the Egyptian people as a whole still don't know exactly what they want.
Yeah, that statement certainly applies in some ways. And I can give you a good example. When we went down on June 30th, everyone around me and everyone in all the protests was chanting and singing for the downfall of Morsi and the downfall of the regime. But not one chant was, we want whoever next. No one was really saying, oh, this is, should come and replace Mohamed Morsi. All of the popular protests were aimed at him and his failings. And so in that sense, yes, it seemed clear that Egyptians, there was no ideal replacement in their minds. And the movement that sort of organized these protests had very specific goals, which have, for the most part, been achieved. Morsi's removal, a call for early presidential and parliamentary elections, and a new democratic transition. So this has been put into motion. So in that sense, Egyptians know they want this. But in terms of a specific leader or political ideology or group to lead the country forward, this is still very fragmented.
Yeah. Listeners, I'm speaking with three young Egyptians who joined us 2 years ago during the first wave of the Egyptian Revolution. They're back with us today as the country is gripped in crisis following the military ousting of former President Mohamed Morsi. Habib El-Magrisi joins us from Cairo. Ina El-Hadidi is in Chicago, and Hesham Hamouda is here with us in the studio. Ina, let me turn to you. How are you feeling after this very tumultuous week in Egypt? What's your response from here in the United States?
I'm completely torn. I have no idea what to feel. I feel the Democrat within me is extremely disappointed that the democratic process was not allowed to play out. And I know that the dirty word today in Egypt is coup, but what happened was a military coup. A democratically elected president was deposed by the military generals, was basically given an ultimatum, leave or else. And then he was arrested. He was put under house arrest at first, and then he was, I believe, taken to the Interior Ministry. But in any case, he was arrested. No. And 300 arrest warrants were issued for all the top leadership in his party, the Muslim Brotherhood. Their media stations were shut down. Journalists arrested, including the media station Al Jazeera. They were shut down as well because they had been seen as pro-Morsi, where really they were just reporting the facts, and they were not a state-sponsored media. So they were telling a different narrative than the narrative the military wanted to be told in Egypt.
I want to ask you a question because you sort of went right at what is a major issue here. And I'm wondering whether or not we look at what's happened recently in Egypt and the use of the military or the actions of the military through a very American lens, because yes, on the one hand, it wasn't a sort of a transition of government through the rule of law or through typical democratic processes as we understand them in America. Yeah. But on the other hand, tens of millions of people were protesting on June 30th or thereabouts. Perhaps, and I'm just throwing this out there, is it such that in a young, emerging democracy such as Egypt may be, that is just the sharp end of the people's will?
I must admit that I do look at the situation in Egypt through a very American lens, and I am very hesitant to rejoice at a military coming in and saving a so-called people's revolution. But I believe happened in Egypt was actually a perfect storm of several factors. First of all, there is an extreme dissatisfaction in Egypt with the situation. There is no security in Egypt to speak of whatsoever. The police, because of the corruption under the Mubarak administration, the police basically disappeared in Egypt after the January 25th revolution. Mayhem and crime have ensued ever since, and nobody has been able to keep that under control. And of course, the citizens of Egypt are extremely enraged. And as I'm sure I believe I've heard this on your show before, but sexual harassment in Egypt is rampant. Human Rights Watch said that 99.3% of women have been sexually harassed in Egypt. And this is just a sample of the crime that has been going on in Egypt.
Let me jump in here again and ask you, because I can hear the passion in your voice, and we heard a similar sort of profound feeling with Habib, but I want to play a piece of tape for you of your first visit to us. Again, February 2nd, 2011, and here it is.
I've never been more proud to be an Egyptian, and especially an Egyptian young person. You know, it's the best time in the world right now, though it is a difficult and trying time.
Ina, do you still feel that same sense of pride today?
Yes, I do, of course. I'm always proud to be an Egyptian American always, but what I do feel is a strong sense of disappointment. I do believe in the democratic process, and I read this great quote, and I want to share it with you. It said that in Egypt, it seems the liberals are not Democrats and the Democrats are not liberals. So I believe what's happening in Egypt is that there is a huge amount of anti-Islamist sentiment, and people who should believe in the democratic process are allowing that to sway their view in a way where they are supporting a military coup. Yeah. They are supporting a military takeover of a democratically elected president. And that, to me, is disheartening, to say the least.
Well, I'm going to turn, Habib, I'm going to bring you back in here in a second, but I do want to get Hashem Hamoda's view on this. We've heard a lot already, Hashem. Do you share similar concerns?
Well, I have to say I have mixed feelings about the whole process. As Ina said, Morsi, after all, wasn't elected president. He wasn't elected with a very narrow margin, and he was not personally my top choice to be the president of Egypt, but he was democratically elected. A year later, we have had this very popular uprising against him, and I understand where people are coming from and the concerns, because his politics have been very divisive for the country, and it's not what we were hoping for after this revolution that a very, very big segment of the Egyptian population supported. So that's kind of, the concern, but now you also had the military taking over. Whether you want to call it a coup or you don't, in reality, that's what happened. They did take over based on very strong popular demand. But really, how do you evaluate popular demand? I mean, that's the concern in Egypt. Everybody thinks they represent the majority. And at the end of the day, it's the ballot box that should be determining that.
Well, listeners, we're speaking with three young Egyptians who joined us 2 years ago during the first wave of the Egyptian revolution. They're back with us today as the country struggles in the latest cresting of crisis and uncertainty there. Habib El-Magrisi is speaking to us from Cairo. Ina El-Khadidi joins us today from Chicago. And Hashem Hamoda is here with us in the studio. So what's your question for them? What's your question for these young Egyptians as they look to what their country is experiencing today? What do you hope for them and for Egypt as it moves forward? The interim military government has named a new prime minister. It says it has a 6-month plan to return to civil democracy. Do you think that's workable? And what does democracy, a stable, lasting democracy in Egypt, look like to you? Call us at 1-800-423-825. That's 800-423-TALK. Hashem, I want to play for you a piece of tape from your last visit to us, again, in February 2011, and here's what you said.
Definitely there is an Egypt without Mubarak, and it's definitely going to be a better Egypt without Mubarak. This country has always been rich of its talent and young generation, and we will definitely be doing better when Mubarak leaves.
So Hashem, let me ask you more about that young generation, because you were speaking earlier that one of the ways to measure what Egypt wants is through the ballot box, but do we know is there any sense of a unifying force amongst young Egyptians today?
There's not. I think the country is very sharply and deeply divided, even among the young revolutionaries who ousted Mubarak before. So unfortunately, the division is huge. But I actually stand and remain confident in terms of what I stated 2.5 years ago. I think the glimpse of hope for Egypt is this young population, because they are not going to let Egypt fall back. There's no turning back for Egypt. And I'm sure that they're going to be really our guarantee that whoever is president is going to be held accountable, because people know their way and people have found their voice.
Before I turn back to Habib, who's in Cairo, I want to ask you, nobody contested Mohamed Morsi's victory in that presidential election. So he won. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are for what this latest action, his ousting, might do for those people who are his supporters, who did actually use democratic processes to elect Morsi, what they might be feeling about Egypt and democracy now.
Right. This actually is one of my biggest concerns about what happened. While I said, I understand where it's coming from, but I feel very concerned that, Egypt had a wave of terrorism in the 90s where, people did not believe in democracy. A segment of the population did not believe in democracy, felt that, overtaking the government using terrorism is what they need to do. I feel like, you know, people have found their voice in the ballot box only 2.5 years ago, and they voted a president, you know, no matter what, you know, we feel about him. And now they see that their choice has been turned around. This is a very big concern. I mean, what does this mean for, you know, the teenagers on the street who are seeing this happen? What does this mean in terms of their belief in democracy and their ability to make change through the ballot box?
Well, Habib, you're in Cairo, and when we first started with you, I heard you say that you supported the military's ousting of President Morsi. But given what Hisham's saying right now, I mean, what do you make of that? Can Egypt's nascent democracy continue to rely on the military to sort of help effect changes in power? I mean, doesn't that undermine the very idea of democratic and civilian rule in the country?
Sure. I'm
Habib, you still with us? We're going to try and get Habib back on the line. He is in Cairo. Ina, let me turn that same question to you. Do you share Hisham's concern that reliance on the military undermines Egyptians' faith in what democracy can mean in terms of long-term stability?
I definitely agree completely with everything Hisham had to say. I'm especially concerned with the rise of the Salafist Noor Party and just general polarization in Egypt right now. I feel like people who are at the ends of the spectrum feel like they're getting more and more polarized, and it terrifies me. Like, is every time we elect a president and we don't like him, are 30 million people going to rush the street wanting to depose him, and then the military is going to intervene? And also, let's not underestimate the fact that the military ruled this country with an iron fist for the last 60 years. Egyptians were not allowed to think freely. They were not allowed to politically organized. Mubarak and his predecessors made sure that there were no viable political answers to the NDP. And what terrifies me is seeing the rise of this the Democratic Party in Egypt, of the National Democratic Party in Egypt again, and just the obliteration of everything the January 25th revolution stood for.
But, you know, let me ask you. I mean, Mohamed Morsi's administration, his government, basically seemed to be scoffing at the idea of lawmaking through consensus or negotiation. I'm reading an Atlantic Monthly article here from writer Thanasi Kambanis, who's in Cairo, and he says that Morsi insisted again and again that the fact that he'd been elected justified basically any and all action, including his attempt to dissolve judicial oversight. I mean, that doesn't sound like but his mode of governing was going to put any sense of confidence in the people that this is a workable democracy for Egypt.
I am not a Mohamed Morsi supporter. I would not have voted for him. I didn't vote in the last election, but I would not have voted for him. I mean, of course, he was the lesser of two evils, seeing how a leftover from the previous regime was running against him, Ahmed Shafiq. So to me, I mean, Morsi is not an ideal candidate. He did not know how to rule. Like I told Amory, they were basically imprisoned for the last, the Muslim Brotherhood, they were imprisoned and shut down for the last 50 years. So they didn't really know how to operate outside of this oppressed like Brotherhood,
right,
or whatever they are.
Well, on that note, let's take a call here, because Ifran is calling from Boston, and I think he has he's going to echo a thought that you're sharing. Ifran, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody. My basic comment is, it took the United States to go through 175 years of history to come to terms with democratic process, with the civil rights movements in the 60s and the current struggles that we are going through. So I think it would be very unfair from international community to demand from Egypt the instant revolution and instant democracy. There will be growing pains, and we will have to be basically on. But what really Egyptian wants to do for themselves.
Irfan, thank you so much for your call. Hisham, what do you make of that?
Well, I agree with Ifran. I think there's a lot of growing pains. And as I said, I believe the only kind of checks and balances that we have is the people's will and the people's demand. My biggest question and my biggest concern is always, how do you really measure that? Can you measure it on the street with, you know, certain cameras, you know, following kind of certain groups of people who are demonstrating? Or should we measure that through a democratic election, which everybody has a free choice and to whether to run or also to vote?
Mm. Habib El-Maghrisi in Cairo, I think we've got you back. Can you hear me, Habib? Habib, are you there? We tried to get him back. We'll try one more time before we run out of time here. Ina El-Hadidi, as you look forward to the, I mean, let's even just talk about the coming weeks and months as Ramadan is beginning to be celebrated and observed in Egypt. What do you hope are the immediate next steps the country takes?
What terrifies me is that the Egyptian appetite, I believe political appetite, and will not be satisfied until a president comes in who fixes all the problems. I think that there is very, unfortunately, very little patience in Egypt, but also the problems that are right now that Egypt is experiencing are not problems that can wait. We're experiencing extremely high unemployment. There is a huge percentage of the population that is living in extreme poverty. There is the sexual harassment that I had alluded to earlier, and there is the lack of common security. You know, there's no security whatsoever in Egypt, and that to me is very scary, and I hope the month of Ramadan brings peace and unity to Egypt. I hope that people can find a way to agree to disagree and understand that the best way to be politically represented is to organize, and we don't always have to agree on everything to organize and to organize into one party, but we do, I believe the opposition needs to create some sort of umbrella party that gathers all of these fragmented parties together and forms a formidable opposition that can actually send out a viable candidate, and I hope to vote for that candidate, and I really just hope that Ramadan brings peace. Yeah. That's my ultimate hope.
Hesham Hamouda, it seems to me, and this has been a recurring theme in our conversations, and that is, first of all, Egypt has an enormous youth population. They've been instrumental ever since January 25th and the days preceding that, 2011. And there's so there's that issue about the role that youth are going to play moving forward for Egypt, but also that perhaps Egypt's path towards a stable democracy has to take it has to take a route that's uniquely Egyptian, and that we can't actually put sort of an American model, set it on top of the country there. So what do you think would be an Egyptian path towards democracy?
Well, I think if anybody knew the exact answer to that, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in Egypt. But I think that Egypt is unique, but there are also, you know, kind of very standard kind of principles of democracy that we should withhold thinking about the transition. So obviously, I think we immediately need a major effort towards reconciliation. There's different factions in Egypt, and some of them are, you know, at different times very, very angry with the outcome of the political process. So how do we reconcile people? And with the spirit of Ramadan, I hope that happens soon, and I hope that we move very quickly towards elections and, you know, having new voted people in power who could help shape the future of Egypt.
Well, Hesham Hamouda is an attending psychiatrist at Children's Hospital and an instructor in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Hesham, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Magna. It's always a pleasure.
And Ina El-Hadidi, a student at UMass Boston and joining us today from Chicago. Ina, it was great to have you back on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me again, Magna.
And Habib El-Maghrisi, who joined us today from Cairo. His line dropped a couple times there. But Habib, if you can still hear us, we were very grateful to have you back on the program as well. And listeners, let us know what you think about next steps in Egypt. You can send us your comments at radioboston.org. Stick with us. There's more of the show coming up. I'm Magna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.